FM, K282 BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220 Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Terrence Burns.
That's K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Josh Salem. All of our KBOO programs, including the evening news, are supported by our members. If you would like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for KBOO News in Depth.
KBOO News in Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
You're listening to KBOO News in Depth. I'm Hannah Francis. Today, we're talking about Street Route correspondent Jake Thomas's article, Banned and Abandoned. As the city begins to cite and arrest people living outside, advocates say the camping ban only makes life harder for Portlanders without shelter. Today, we are talking about Street Route's correspondent Jake Thomas's article, Banned and Abandoned. As the city begins to cite and arrest people for living outside, advocates say the camping ban only makes life harder for Portlanders without shelter. I have here with me Street Route's correspondent Jake Thomas. Welcome to the show, Jake.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a pleasure. So first, will you tell me about what the mayor did on November 1st that sort of spurred this whole article?
So he started enforcing what's called the city's camping ban ordinance. And basically what that does, it says you can't set up a tent or other structure on public property.
Right. So can you give me a little bit more detail about, are there parameters around where you can't set up a tent, or is it just like all over the city?
So the mayor has said that they're going to start enforcing the camping ban. But they say they have enough shelter, which we'll get to in a minute, but I'm sure. But he also said that any camping that happens needs to be done responsibly. And what he means by that is that no setting fires, no blocking pedestrians or dumping trash or anything like that. So he's kind of saying, like, you can camp, but don't do these things, but we're not going to camp at all, which is a little contradictory. And I pressed the mayor's office about this a little bit, and they said that enforcement is not absolute citywide ban on camping. So it's been a little bit unclear from that. So it's not like they're going to get completely, it's going to go away, but they are going to start enforcing it.
Gotcha. And so, like you're saying, there's this other aspect, which is the shelter beds. Mm-hmm. So can you talk a little bit more about the shelter bed program that the mayor is trying to roll out?
Yeah. So the mayor paused enforcement of the camping ban, which has been in place since Ted Wheeler was mayor. So he paused enforcement of it to get more shelters, to really ramp that up. And the idea was that if you have enough shelters, you shouldn't be camping, because the mayor's argument is that if you're living in these encampments, that they're not safe, they're not, you know, they're just not humane. This is his argument. He's been trying to build up these shelters. And the big question has been, are people going to go to them? Because a lot of them are, I mean, the shelters there, they differ. There's some shelters where it's like you get your own room even, or, and some are, you just have a little bit more privacy, or there's some, like the county runs some shelters that we get your pod. But these are different, because a lot of these shelters are in these congregate settings. I think a lot of churches run them. And so you go into them, and it's these beds in rows, and you have to leave pretty early, like 6 or 7 in the morning. And you can reserve most of these shelters. If you stay at them, you can come back the next night and you automatically get another bed, but you still have to leave during the day. You have to haul your stuff around. And there's been a big question about whether people will use them. It was leading up to when the ban went into effect. The mayor and one of his policy advisors appeared before Metro Council, and they were saying that like 50 to 60% of the beds were being used on any given night. And so that really raised questions like they built all these shelters, but is anybody going to come? In fairness, the mayor's office did release some numbers later saying that it was up to like 73% around there. They were had more people, more higher occupancy with it getting colder out. But that's been like the other part of it is that they're going to have more shelter beds and start, you know, enforcing the ban.
Great. Thanks. Yeah. So there's like there's a lot more shelter beds now. There are still not enough to actually shelter all of the unhoused people in Portland, hypothetically, if they all went to the shelter. Mm-hmm. Is that right?
Yeah, that's this came out right when the point in time count came out, which is this big federally mandated census. And it's considered an undercount. It's not super accurate, but it gives at least like some idea. And so that came out and it showed that it measures it on the tri-county area, you know, Clackamas, Multnomah, and Washington. And it found there was 12,034 people in these three counties. And that was a 61% increase from 2023, the last time they did it. So we're seeing more homeless people in the region. People are entering homelessness at a rate that's faster than they can get into shelters. This all came out, just when we knew that, you know, we got these numbers showing this dynamic, that this is just a really big problem.
Right. Yeah. And I think it's probably worth mentioning, as you've kind of touched on, is that like these shelter beds are not a transition to housing, or they're not bringing these people out of houselessness. They're kind of an emergency temporary shelter.
Yes. Yes. That's a very good point, is that they are. And that's what the mayor's office calls them. They are emergency shelters, overnight shelters. So it's not a permanent solution. I know that, you know, that there are service providers, like there are people trying to get people in these shelters, presumably out of the shelters and into more permanent housing, but yeah, it's not as if that this is going to be a permanent solution.
Yeah. So maybe we could talk a little bit about the like criminalized part of this. Mm-hmm. With the camping ban enforced, how does this affect people's lives if they are taken off the street and put into prison or the criminal justice system?
So that's what we're trying to figure out right now. That's kind of the big question. I know that the mayor, when he made this announcement, he says, that we can't, the city can't arrest its way out of homelessness, and it shouldn't. And so I think that they're really trying not to arrest people for this. And the sheriff, the Multnomah County sheriff who runs the jail, she has come out and she previously said, we're not using the jail for this. Like, we're using the jail for people who do violent things. We're not going to start putting people in jail for, you know, camping or being homeless. So and she reiterated that. She issued a statement recently reiterating that. The Multnomah County District Attorney came out. He said something very similar, that he doesn't want to start. He doesn't want to like start bringing charges against people. Like, if people have to go to court, they're going to do everything they can to drop the charge. So that there is, I think that a lot of leaderships, a lot of people in leadership positions and in the local criminal justice system realize that that you can't criminalize your way out of this. So they are sensitive to that. But at the same time, they are sending, you could get a citation from it. You could possibly get a citation from it. It's $100. And if you're living outside, you probably don't have money for that. I know it's I know they're trying not to. Yeah, like the Nathan Vasquez, the prosecutor from Multnomah County, he says that they're going to try to do everything they can to dismiss the case and try to connect that person to services. A couple of days after the ban came out, the city released some statistics about how this has played out. So during the first 5 days of the ban, police spoke to 101 people at 57 locations. And of those contacts, police issued 83 warnings, 7 citations, and 39 people went to overnight shelters. Portland police arrested 40 people during that time, but that was for outstanding warrants. That was for just unrelated things. And they also sent two people to the county's deflection center, which is that was set up after they did the legislature did the big rollback of Measure 110, the drug decriminalization law. And what those deflection centers do is that if you're caught with drugs, they send you there. And if you do treatment, you can get out of having charges.
I do think that it's great that the local law enforcement is putting forward the intention to mm-hmm. not just put people right into prison for this. But there are a lot of things that are criminalized that are only criminalized outside, right? You know, like alcohol and drug use in your own home, not a problem. On the street, a problem, right? And mm-hmm. so I think it's just like interesting to look at those patterns and just kind of notice how law enforcement keeps those two things separate and like categorizes them separately. I guess we've pretty much talked about most of the main points of this article, but I'd love to hear what you're hoping to see from this next. Anything else that you want to add?
So I guess the going forward, it is going to be, yeah. So here's kind of some of the things I'm going to be thinking about as this goes forward. So I mean, the big one is like, are people actually going to use these shelter beds? So that's going to be worth checking on. I think the cost, just how much they cost, the mayor's office has said that they cost just a fraction of just what some other interventions cost. And they, I mean, if you think about it, it's not that much. It's like a church. They throw in some beds, they get some staff. They argue it's a pretty low cost intervention. So I think how much they spend on this and what kind of return they get is going to be worth watching. And also just like, how do you measure this? Cause like, you know, I mentioned with the, the point in time count, which is already just, you know, famously not very accurate and precise. That comes out every 2 years. So how would you measure this? Like, how would you, I just don't know what metric you would use is one of the things worth watching for. And also then the mayor, the big thing with this is the mayor has set a December 1st goal of ending unsheltered homelessness. That is coming right up. And I wonder what he's going to say. Like once we come up on December 1st, like what, if he's in a clear victory, a partial victory, like just how can you conclusively say that there's no more unsheltered homelessness in Portland?
Yeah, great. Thanks for your time, Jake. Really appreciate it.
Of course. Yeah, thanks for having me.
Yeah, of course. You've been listening to a conversation with Street Roots correspondent Jake Thomas about his recent article, Banned and Abandoned. As the city begins to cite and arrest people living outside, advocates say the camping ban only makes life harder for Portlanders without shelter. This is Street Roots Radio, a collaboration between X-Ray FM, KBOO Radio, and local publication Street Roots. For KBOO News in Depth, I'm Hannah Francis.
KBOO News in Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
You are listening to KBOO News in Depth. I'm Althea Billings. Portland City Council heard hours of testimony earlier today on City Councilor Angelita Murillo's amendment to reallocate dollars set aside for homeless sweeps towards housing, food assistance, and refugee support. The amendment, called Murillo 1, centers around the Impact Reduction Program, or IRP. That program does sweeps, but it also does trash cleanup and sanitation work. Murillo's amendment clarifies that those components wouldn't be changed. Here's some of what Portlanders had to say.
Hello, City Council. My name is Jordan Lewis. I'm a registered lobbyist for Portland DSA and a D4 resident. I'm testifying today in favor of the Murillo 1 amendment. I wanted to testify on agenda item 7, but I was in a call at my day job, which I used to pay rent, so I couldn't make that. I can't help but draw some connections between our cities and our county's executive branch. Both our mayor and president got elected on broad mandates that a problem was happening. The mayor on the fact that people were living on the streets, and the president on pandemic-era inflation. The president got over his skis when he assumed there was a mandate for his weird little methods. Swing voters wanted him to magically lower the price of hamburgers. They did not vote to doge all the air traffic controllers or raise their health insurance premiums, and now he has a historic disapproval rating to show for it. I bring this up because Mayor Wilson campaigned on a surge of shelter bed capacity, which would be used. You can see in his voters pamphlet, he never mentions an increase in sweeps. In the standees out in the hallway, no mention of sweeps. I want to quote a North Peninsula Review article with Wilson from last October. Wilson says the plan could save nearly $300 million annually that the city now must spend on police and firefighter calls to incidents involving unsheltered homeless people, including overtime costs, arrest warrants, homeless camp sweeps, and fencing around public rights of way. I'll repeat, Wilson said the plan could save nearly $300 million annually that the city must spend on houseless camp sweeps. So don't let the mayor hide his sweep plan behind the idea of a mandate when he was too cowardly to talk about sweeps on the campaign trail. Voters indulge in a little magical thinking that we could warehouse over 12,000 of our poorest neighbors rather than confront the problem that year after year, rent and cost of living rise faster than the median wage. And rather than work towards confronting that uncomfortable fact, a lot of people whose bottom line depends on rent going up every year are here today at 9:30 in the morning on a weekday to demand that we further brutalize and displace those who already can't afford to live here. Thank you very much.
My name's John Hollister, and I live in District 4. You guys got some work to do. Brought this a little early, so why don't you just do your work? But thank you, City Council, for allowing me to provide testimony. I'd like to thank individually the commissioners that I know are voting against this misguided amendment. Thank you, Commissioner Ryan. Thank God you don't get tired of saving Portland again and again and again. Commissioner Pertley-Guinea, I hope I'm pronouncing that somewhat correctly. Thank you. Commissioner Novick, thank you so much. District 3 needs you, and I plan on supporting your reelection campaign in 2026. Commissioner Clark and Zimmerman, I also will be supporting greatly your reelection campaigns in 2026. And a very special thanks to you, Commissioner Green. You see, I want you to lose. And with your voting to defund the police a few months ago, and now voting to defund keeping our neighborhood safe without properly working this thing through, you make it so clear to everyone in District 4 that you do not represent our viewpoints. I am gonna work hard to have a candidate named Eli Arnold who does listen and support District 4's viewpoints replace you in 2026. Commissioner Smith, you certainly have a bright spot on you right now. This is your moment. I can't imagine the amount of pressure you're under. Your vote can save Portland. Please don't try to fix this amendment with yet another amendment. Just listen to your constituents and vote no. Thank you all in advance.
My name is Lydia Kiesling. I'm a member of Portland DSA and a resident of District 3. The nonpartisan news source ProPublica has published deep reporting from Portland and around the country about the cost of sweeps and the effects of these band-aid approaches to homelessness. Sweeps, particularly in places that do not have the housing, healthcare, or behavioral health supports for people to be swept into, exacerbate homelessness and suffering. In Portland, a sweeps first policy has led to multiple deaths. We elected a new city council because we wanted them to try different things. The old ways of underfunding basic social supports while ramping up enforcement do not work. They rely on a worldview about homelessness that can lead to prison camps in a country that refuses to invest in real solutions. Why are we talking about sweeping human beings up like trash when there's a half-empty luxury condo building sitting right up the street, one that I think still owes the city money? We need dedicated, trained navigators with deep reserves of patience. We need nimble and accessible social service systems and plentiful housing with wraparound support. We need eviction defense to keep people in their homes to begin with. This small budget adjustment will not end sweeps, but it will divert a little more money to real solutions. I'm empathetic to people whose homes and businesses are on the front lines of this crisis, but people still need to be adults. There's no Santa Claus of sweeps who can make this problem of human suffering disappear overnight. If we are not honest about the root cause of homelessness, which is a broken social safety net and neoliberal economics, we will only compound suffering and push people onto someone else's doorstep, killing some of them in the process. Unsheltered homelessness is a symptom of a society that does not treat housing, healthcare, food, or education as a human right. I am glad Councillor Murillo has brought this amendment because it will force all of you to go on the record about whether you believe in performative and ineffective cruelty, or if you can commit to the hard and sometimes unpopular work of public policy that is rooted not only in evidence, but in humanity. Thank you.
Okay, Brian Owendoff, District 4. I'm here today to ask for a no vote on Councillor Murillo's ill-conceived proposal to deduct $4.3 million from the impact reduction. The IPR is one of the few city programs that keeps Portland functional. Every week, its crews remove tons of trash, needles, and hazardous waste from our neighborhoods, parks, and sidewalks. Without them, our city will deteriorate rapidly. Both public health and safety will suffer. Councilor Merlot's amendment claims to reduce campsite sweeps by redirecting IPR funding. In reality, it will make conditions worse for everybody, housed and unhoused. This is not a political issue. It's a public health issue. The IPR keeps our streets and parks safe by removing hazardous materials, used needles, fentanyl residue, human waste, and other contaminants that threaten both people and the environment. When IRP crews are in the field, they're not just cleaning up. They're often the first point of contact for some people ready to connect with outreach, shelter, or treatment. Cutting these crews would mean fewer opportunities to connect people with help. And let's be clear. This isn't a real cost-saving measure, it's false economy. The trash, fires, environmental damage that will follow only shift to emergency response, fire, and cleanup later at a much higher price. We can be compassionate and practical at the same time, but defunding the program that keeps our public safe, clean, and accessible is neither. At a time when we should be doubling down on efforts to make Portland cleaner and safer, this proposal does the opposite. I urge you to protect the full funding of the Impact Reduction Program. Please do not cut IRP funding. Support IRP. Support public health. Support the people working every day to keep Portland clean and safe. Thank you.
Hello, my name is Catherine Applegarth, and I'm a senior administrator at the International School of Portland. I'm reading on behalf of Bodo Heiliger, head of school at the International School of Portland. Good afternoon, council members. Every day at the ISP, nearly 1,000 children, teachers, and families come downtown to school every day because we believe in our mission, in Portland, and in its future. I want to say this plainly. Now is not the time to pull back on funding for the Impact Reduction Program and associated safety and sanitation programs. We haven't fully recovered yet. Our work to rebuild together isn't done. Please vote no on the Murillo Amendment. Our campus spans three city blocks, nearly half a mile of sidewalks. During the darkest days of the pandemic, when so many went remote or closed, our school didn't. We opened emergency childcare for first responders. We came early to campus to make sure our playgrounds, sidewalks, and classrooms were safe. We stayed, we believed, we never gave up on this city. At that time, however, we felt very, very alone in our work. Since the IRP increased its presence, our neighborhood has never been cleaner or safer. We see it, our families feel it. The promise of renewal is working. The IRP isn't just about garbage removal or campsite assessments. It's about dignity, safety, and keeping hope visible for the next generation. It's what allows hundreds of children to walk, learn, and play downtown, safely and proudly every single day. We work side by side with our neighbors, including those living and working at the Southwest NATO Safe Rest Village, to build a more compassionate and peaceful city. That's what Portland is supposed to be about. If we reduce the IRP now, we risk losing the progress we fought so hard for. We risk sending a message that Portland is stepping back on its own promise, not only to the children of Portland, but to our neighboring formerly unhoused individuals working hard to get back on their feet. Today, three downtown schools, including ISP, Bridges Middle School, and Lincoln High School, stand together representing education from preschool through high school. Together, we represent Portland's future, learning, reading, and believing in this place we call home. I urge you to stay the course. Thank you.
Members of the council, my name is Diana Rempe. I work for Street Books, a mobile library serving people outside and on the margins. We strongly support the Murillo Amendment. For the past 15 years, we've been out on the streets building relationships as we offer books, reading glasses, harm reduction, and other survival supplies. This vantage point has given our organization a close-up view of the suffering and displacement caused by sweeps, of the daily trauma inflicted on our library patrons as they struggle to meet their basic needs, and of the ways that sweeps exacerbate crisis and instability. In our daily work on the streets, we see rapid response workers moving from place to place all day long, indiscriminately throwing things into garbage bags as people struggle to gather what they can. We hear the stories of the things people have lost: IDs, medications, the last picture of their dead child. Many people will testify that this policy is about trash, but that is not true. This policy is about displacement, about moving people out of sight to appease the complaints of those who do not want to look at the evidence of our society's decision that certain people do not deserve to have their most basic needs met and must live without shelter on the sidewalks, doorways, and streets of our city. If you're truly concerned about trash and jobs, ramp up existing programs like those offered by GroundScore, creating many more low-barrier jobs as you do so. If you're truly concerned about biohazards, work to provide easy access to bathrooms and support meaningful, proven harm reduction programs. If you're truly concerned about helping people live somewhere other than the streets, provide a range of real housing options with an emphasis on permanent supportive housing. As I conclude, I will leave you with the story of Bee, who appeared in her wheelchair at our shift in Northwest Portland. She'd just been swept and talked about having to leave everything because there was no way to carry it on her wheelchair. She said, crying, "I feel like human garbage. We have to stop treating human beings like trash." We urge you to support this amendment and continue the council's important work to meaningfully affect people's lives. Thank you.
Thank you. My name is Steve Gold, and I live in District 4, and I'm here in opposition to the Maria 1 amendment and any other amendment that reduces funding for the IRP. Mayor Wilson was elected with a clear mandate, winning 59% of the votes across this city, as someone has also already pointed out, way more than anyone here. He was elected with one central policy mandate, and he's going through with it. Very simply, Portlanders are fed up with the decline in livability in our city and with the failure of prior leaders to make any real progress. We want safe neighborhoods, vibrant business districts, and welcoming public spaces. We don't want out open drug use, untreated mental health, and the squalor that exists around encampments. To bring it to a personal level, my family doesn't want people with untreated mental illness throwing rocks through our shop windows, having to recover our stolen bikes from criminals living in encampments, or cleaning up drug paraphernalia from our yards and parks. Not too much to expect. We want leaders to do the heavy lifting, implement policies based on facts, not ideology. Some living on the streets are victims, and they need our support. But some are predators and criminals, and we want you to deal with the difference. I have over two decades of firsthand experience dealing with people with serious mental illness, and I can assure you that leaving people to suffer on the streets is heartless. Why would you even consider pulling the plug on something that is beginning to work? As I walk around town through my neighborhoods and downtown, I see things getting better. Having done your job and passed the budget, I'd like you to stop tinkering with the mayor's policies and let them have a chance to prove themselves. With the mayor's plan, some might choose shelter or treatment, some might move elsewhere, criminals might get prosecuted. Thinking you have a better idea and unfunding revenue streams without any public vetting is nothing but dysfunction. And it undermines a mayor who's actually doing what 59% of the people voted him in to do. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
You just heard testimony given to Portland City Council earlier today on Councilor Angelita Murillo's amendment to reallocate dollars set aside for homeless sweeps and moving them towards housing, food assistance, and refugee support. For KBOO News in Depth, I'm Althea Billings. We'll be right back.
KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. The Executive Committee meets on the second Thursday of the month at 6 p.m. This month's meeting will be held at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland and online through our public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting virtually can be found on our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify if a meeting is being held.